Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, September 21st, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. A property belonging to the Zimbabwean government is auctioned in South Africa today to pay legal costs incurred by white farmers in their bid to get compensation for their farms.
Which is quite a strong message to send out and a strong way of exposing the fact that things are not right in Zimbabwe, things need to be corrected.
The head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, begins a three-day visit to the United States tomorrow. But what does his flock in Zimbabwe think?
Let me take this opportunity to put the record straight. There is absolutely no issue of talks taking place between the MDC, led by President Morgan Tsvangirai, and the ZANU-PF, aimed at forming a so-called GNU-2.
And reports about a negotiation between the ruling ZANU-PF and the two Movement for Democratic Change parties led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Professor Welshman Ncube about a possible government of national unity is getting mixed reactions from the parties. These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned. A property belonging to the Zimbabwean government was auctioned in Cape Town, South Africa today to pay for legal costs incurred by white farmers in their bid to get compensation for their farms that were forcibly taken by the government during the land reform program that began in 2000. AfriForum, a South African-based human rights group, says the sale is a result of the organization's success in assisting dispossessed Zimbabwean commercial farmers to enforce a 2008 ruling by the SADC Tribunal, which found that the appropriation of the farmers' land without compensation was unlawful, racist, and in contravention of international law. Benedict Nhlapo reports from Johannesburg.
After a number of expressions of interest from some buyers, Deputy Sheriff of the Wynberg North Court, Mone Fanda Fainfa, brought the hammer down and sold the house to Arthur Tsimitakopoulos for just over 3.7 million rands. AfriForum said the Zimbabwean government had tried to stop the auction by offering to pay the legal costs incurred by the farmers in taking this case to different courts. However, the sale went on when Zimbabwe failed to make the payment. This is the first time in the history of Africa that a country's property is sold to compensate those affected by its alleged human rights abuses. AfriForum legal representative Advocate Willie Spice said the sale of the Zimbabwean property at number 28 Sosbel Road, Kenilworth, Cape Town, was a strong warning to countries perpetrating human rights abuses that they could still be prosecuted using the courts of neighboring countries.
What we have now is an international human rights ruling that's been enforced against the perpetrator, which is quite a strong message to send out and a strong way of exposing the fact that things are not right in Zimbabwe, things need to be corrected, and that what has happened so far was illegal and had to be rectified.
In 2008, white farmers whose farms were expropriated without compensation during land invasion in Zimbabwe approached the SADC Tribunal to seek recourse. The tribunal ruled that Zimbabwe's land reform program was illegal, racist, and violated the international law. It ordered that the farmers be compensated. The Zimbabwean government ignored the ruling, forcing AfriForum to take the case to the Supreme Court, which affirmed the tribunal's decision. The Zimbabwean government then took the case to the Constitutional Court, which also affirmed the tribunal's ruling and ordered Zimbabwe to pay the legal costs incurred by farmers through AfriForum. Zimbabwe's failure to pay the legal costs compelled AfriForum to attach this property, resulting in today's auction. A German bank, KfW, will get a share from the sale after it also successfully sought the attachment of the same property. The bank is owed millions by the Zimbabwean government on money borrowed to bail out the troubled Zimbabwe Iron and Steel Company. But Spies said the most important thing for his organization is the victory for human rights, not the money involved.
The important thing is the fact that the property is being sold and the fact that a statement is made that a country that is guilty of human rights abuses are being punished in this manner.
He said the next step now is to get an international court to determine the amount that should be paid by the Zimbabwean government to compensate the farmers' expropriated farms. At the height of land invasions in Zimbabwe, several white farmers were killed, abducted, beaten, and asked to vacate their farms empty-handed. Attempts to get a reaction from the Zimbabwean government had not been fruitful at the time of airing the story. Reporting for Studio 7 in Johannesburg, this is Benedict Nhlapo.
Thank you, Benedict. Blessing Zulu reached out to Zimbabwe's ambassador in South Africa, Mr. Isaac Moyo, who had this to say.
Well, yes, I have also been advised that the property, which is a house, which was occupied by one of our officers, has been auctioned. As to my response, very disappointed indeed, because this auction comes after we made payment and the people who auctioned that property knew that they had been paid.
So will you be seeking legal recourse since you are saying there was a payment that had been made?
We definitely will respond to this. As to what the nature of that response, I cannot say at this moment, but we will respond.
That was Zimbabwe's ambassador to South Africa, Isaac Moyo, speaking to Studio 7 from Johannesburg. The head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, will be on a three-day visit to the United States starting tomorrow. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi went to a local parish in Harare to hear the views of the Catholic community on the Pope's visit and filed this report.
Millions of people went to church across the world yesterday for their routine praise of the Almighty. Studio 7 visited the Budiriro Parish of the Catholic Church, where parishioners listened to the teachings of their local preacher and sang praise and worship songs. After the service, one church goer, Martin Munetsi, said the Pope's visit to Philadelphia, New York, and Washington, D.C. in the United States was a consolidation of a new world order spearheaded by the United States and the clergy.
I think there's nothing wrong about any visitation by any religious, political, or social icon in the world. But what I am aware of, according to the Word of God, referred to in the books of Daniel and Revelation, the Catholic system and the United States are referred to as the first and second beast, which works as a counterfeit system against Christ. So, to my view as an individual, this system is an antichrist system. So the visiting of the Pope to the United States and Africa, which is going to take place in the coming few days, I think it's a consolidation of a new world order agenda.
Miriam Rukobo praised the Pope for advocating for women to take up leadership positions in the governance of the Catholic Church, saying women were lagging behind in taking up leadership roles. Rukobo says women should be proactive in all positions of authority, like their male counterparts inside and outside the church community.
I agree with the Pope. As women, we must take positions in either church or government institutions. Even in politics, we must take higher positions also.
Gilbert Ngwarai told Studio 7 that Pope Francis, who has hinted that he would resign if he fails to carry on with his duties, should use his visit to the United States to push for all leaders who have failed their nations to step down. Ngwarai said the Pope should not stop at anything to call on Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe to step down for allegedly pushing the country's economy into the abyss and failing to protect and promote the rights of the Zimbabwean people.
I believe and trust also that in that doctrine, an elder person should appreciate that there is a time of retirement when the health is not permitting a person to continue working. Especially in Zimbabwe, we've got a crisis of a person who is even 20 years older than the Pope, who is Robert Mugabe, should also resign so that it paves way for a better future for the children who are struggling in this country.
This was supported by Munetsi.
According to how this system works, if you fail to deliver an agenda, you have to resign, you have to step down, or they will deal with you in other ways.
After taking over the leadership of the Catholic Church from Pope Benedict XVI in 2013, who resigned because of ill health, Pope Francis, who was elected on a mandate to restructure the outdated Vatican bureaucracy and reform the scandal-mad Vatican Bank, named 9 cardinals from around the globe to advise him and created commissions of inquiry, including outside experts and consultants, to propose a more efficient, transparent, and accountable administration for the church and its assets. Gibson Govero says the Pope's actions are a lesson to all people in positions of authority that corruption should be nipped in the bud.
I think the Pope is a very responsible man. He's so concerned about the public funds. To me, it's very good.
Meanwhile, Garikai Mbofana tells Studio 7 the Catholic Church has to come up with a clear position on same-sex marriages. President Mugabe, who is a devout Catholic, has criticized gays and lesbians, saying they are caught worse than pigs and dogs. Pope Francis famously uttered, "Who am I to judge?" when asked about a Vatican monster who had allegedly had a gay lover in the past. Mbofana said the Pope and Mr. Mugabe's statements appeared as if the Catholic Church had no clear position on same-sex marriages.
Yeah, I think there is the contradictions because the Pope has not said anything about the gays, and the president of Zimbabwe saying that the gays are worse than pigs and dogs.
Munetsi also echoed Mbofana's statements.
It confirms my foresaid statements that it's a counterfeit system which works against Christ, which I can refer to as Antichrist system. Because if he is a true Christian religious icon, he should denounce such acts which are unbiblical.
Pope Francis is expected to make his first visit to Africa in November this year. The Vatican announced that during his 6-day visit to Africa, the pontiff would visit 3 countries, namely Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Thanks, Thomas. Meanwhile, Pope Francis leaves Cuba's capital and heads to the eastern part of the island nation today, one day after meeting with the Castro brothers who have ruled Cuba since 1959. The pontiff arrives to Holguín, which is the home province of Fidel and Raul Castro. The city of Holguín, more than 800 kilometers east of Havana, is known for a cross that has overlooked the town for centuries. The Roman Catholic leader will celebrate Mass in front of tens of thousands of people in Holguín before heading to Cuba's second largest city, Santiago, where he will visit the Shrine of the Virgin of Charity. Marvelous Mhlanganya, who has spoke with 31-year-old Zimbabwean clergyman Father Tafadzwa Gushamba of the Roman Catholic Church, who says he's looking forward to the papal visit.
I think Pope Francis' trip to the United States will be a joyful moment for all Catholics and for all people of goodwill here. And I think his visit is going to inspire so many people, and especially the fact that he has been talking of the importance of loving God and loving neighbor and serving God and serving neighbor. So I think this will inspire so many people to take up his message and live it.
What do you think Zimbabweans back home can also benefit from this visit from Pope Francis?
Actually, there are some Zimbabweans who will be attending the world meeting of families which is an international event that is hosted by the church. So I think they are coming here, they're going to take the message they get, and they're going to share it with the people back home. But I also think that for people back home, it's always good that they follow all the proceedings to see what the church and the Holy Father are talking about, especially with regards to the family.
What are some of the teachings that he has given you that have made you grow in your faith that can benefit all our listeners listening right now?
One of the things that has really touched me is emphasis on mercy. I think it's important to know that we have God who is so merciful, but I think as individuals, we need to turn our hearts to God and to come to a life of repentance, which can help our relationship with God to increase. Another thing, too, that Pope Francis has really inspired me is his message of charity. I think it's very, very, very important that whatever we do, charity should take precedence, our love of God and our love of neighbor.
And that was Father Tafadzwa Kushamba of the Roman Catholic Church speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye from Wisconsin in the United States. Taking on the Pope's message of peace, Zimbabwe today joined the world in marking International Peace Day with a call to end all forms of violence to ensure the country is fully developed. Arthur Chigoriwa has more from the provincial capital.
Speaking in Shinoi today at an event to mark the day, the Minister of State in Vice President Mpoko's office, Tabitha Kanengoni Malinga, said without peace there will never be development to talk about in the country. Kanengoni said the International Peace Day is an opportunity for communities to embrace each other's differences, listen to each other, preach tolerance, and ensure the voices of the poor are heard.
Only appreciates the partnerships it has with the following organizations. Traditional leaders as the custodians of our cultural values and heritage. The church as they continue to preach the need for peace amongst all of us. Civil society organizations as they work amongst various communities where peace building programs are implemented so that communities can make a contribution to the development of our country.
Chief Milton Dandawa concurred with Minister Kanengoni, saying if there was no peace following the liberation struggle, the rural communities in the country would not have known any development. UN Resident Coordinator in Zimbabwe, Mr. Bishop Parajuli, who read the United Nations Secretary General's message, said it is said that this year the International Day of Peace is coming at a time of deadly violence and destabilizing conflicts. He said the world should join hands to end the hostilities that are seeing thousands leaving their countries to seek refuge elsewhere.
This year's International Day of Peace comes at a time of deadly violence and destabilizing conflicts around the world. Rather than succumbing to despair, we have a collective responsibility to demand an end to the brutality and impunity that prevail.
Different civil society groups also commemorated the International Day of Peace. Church and the Civil Society Forum members on peace, in line with the theme of building partnerships, joined the Buera Peace Club in commemorating community partnerships for peace. Today, the team convened a peace conference for local businesses and a short course on business, peace, and development. The purpose of the training is to provide local businesses with an opportunity to brainstorm on their contribution to building peace in their communities and to motivate local businesses to invest in local peace initiatives. The commemorations will continue tomorrow, bringing together young people from Buera Ward 1 to 6 to participate in a community peace tournament to be held at Chigavakava Township. Youth Zimbabwe Trust hosted victims of political violence at a workshop in Mashingo as part of activities to mark the day. Today's commemorations are held under the theme Partnerships for Peace, Dignity for All. Reporting for Studio 7 in Shinoi, this is Arthur Chigoriwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
on the internet. Find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up, Tatenda Gumbo discusses door-to-door HIV testing with Dr. Mutsa Mangara. But first, we take a look at regional and international news. At least 54 people were reportedly killed in explosions suspected to be the work of Boko Haram militants late yesterday in northern Nigeria. And the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency said that significant progress had been made in the UN's long-running probe into allegations Iran worked to develop nuclear weapons. And in our health segment, the Minister of Health and Child Care will on October 5th embark on a national door-to-door HIV and AIDS survey expected to assess HIV and AIDS in the country. This survey, apart from measuring the prevalence rate of HIV, will provide testing for HIV and syphilis, CD4 count, direct counseling, treatment and referral care. For further perspective on the national campaign, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke to Dr. Mutsa Mangara, Strategic Information Coordinator for the HIV program in the Ministry of Health. Dr. Mangara explains the targets for the survey.
One thing which is very unique about this survey is that we are going to measure the HIV status in households, and we are also going to give the results at the same time, which is very unique in the sense that most surveys, they take blood samples, but however, the participants, they never get the results. But here, we'll retain the results the same day. And once we retain these results, it gives an opportunity for those who would participate in this survey, number one, to know their HIV status.
Doctor, I'll come in here to ask you, when those who will be surveying these random households arrive to your door, what exactly should one expect to occur?
We expect anyone who is above the age of 18 to consent. We don't force anyone to get in the survey. We expect anyone to give a willingful consent after being given this information about the survey. So to anyone who consents will get in the survey, and then to anyone who is below the age of 18, from 7 years to 18 years, we still expect the bond or the guidance to consent to the test, and then we also expect the individual to assent so that it's also agreeable to this survey and to the testing. And of course, we would also expect those below the age of 17 for the adults to offer the consent.
Looking at what you're talking about, the linkage to care for those who might find themselves testing HIV positive, is the country able to accommodate all those who will be in need for any antiretroviral therapy?
Yes, the country at the moment, we have got our patients who are currently in care, and we have got adequate stocks in terms of accommodating any person who will be found in the survey to be HIV positive. As long as this person is eligible for treatment, our stocks are quite adequate, and we actually expect that we are able to identify more and more people during this survey so that we reach our country targets, which we are aiming for 2020, where we are aiming for 90% of people who are HIV positive to know their status, and 90% of those people who are actually HIV positive to be on treatment, and 90% of those on treatment achieving viral load suppression.
And Dr. Mangara, looking forward as Zimbabwe tackles the issue of HIV and AIDS in the country forward, what else will be implemented by the ministry and other stakeholders?
Our main strategy is prevention. We want to emphasize, like what our minister always says, to emphasize on prevention as our number one strategy.
That was Dr. Mutsa Mangara, Strategic Information Coordinator for the HIV program in the Ministry of Health. Reports about a negotiation between the ruling ZANU-PF and the two MDCs, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai and Professor Welshman Ncube, about a possible government of national unity, or GNU2, is getting mixed reactions from the parties, as Studio 7's Blessing Zulu investigations revealed.
A report by Newsday this weekend that secret talks are underway between ZANU-PF and the Tsvangirai and Ncube-led MDC formations is facing heavy criticism and denial by all parties mentioned. According to the report, which Newsday says is based on authoritative sources, the parties met in Ghana to discuss, one, how the opposition parties could help ZANU-PF revive the economy, and secondly, disrupting any coalition plans between former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's alleged People's First Party and the Tsvangirai-led MDC. The paper quotes unnamed sources confirming that party representatives, quote, had meetings in Kenya and Ghana, but these are preliminary, close quote. While both MDCs confirmed that indeed such meetings did take place in at least Ghana, both denied that it had anything to do with the above stated talks. Here's MDC spokesperson Obed Gutu.
Let me take this opportunity to put the record straight. There is absolutely no issue of talks taking place between the MDC, led by President Morgan Tsvangirai, and the ZANU-PF, aimed at forming a so-called GNU2.
Also acknowledging the meeting, but not the substance, is Professor Welshman Ncube.
There was a meeting in Ghana.
As reported in Newsday, Gutu says representatives of parties, namely ZANU-PF's July Moyo and Opamu Chinguri, MDCT's Douglas Monzora and Lynette Karenyi, and MDCN's Moses Mzilandlovu and Miriam Mushaya, did indeed meet in Ghana. The meeting was for secretary generals of the party.
That meeting was primarily what is called a secretary general's forum.
Ncube, who did not name names, also confirmed that the meeting did take place, but was a standard procedure.
It was not a meeting of three political parties, but it was an international meeting of countries which are part of what is called the multi-party dialogue forum for parties in Africa, under the auspices of the Dutch Institute for Multi-Party Democracy.
However, ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo denied any knowledge of such a meeting.
We in ZANU-PF and the spokesman of the party, I know nothing about such talks.
Asked repeatedly about this, Moyo said there was no truth to the matter.
We are saying there's no such thing.
But the opposition parties are actually confirming that there was a meeting,
no,
though it was not about...
That also. They are denying that also in the papers today.
Speculation about a second GNU formation, or at least talks to help bring back some of the social and economic gains of the inclusive government formed between ZANU-PF and the MDC between 2008 and 2013, has been circulating in the media for a while. Acknowledging such speculation, Ncube hinted of some truth to the rumors, identifying an area of common understanding that all parties are called meet.
As a party, what we have said is that maybe the areas in which it might be possible to reach agreement is how do we go about implementing the new constitution, what are the priorities under that constitution to create the institutions which are provided for in the constitution. What is it that we can do to work together around expediting the processes which are undoubtedly taking place of harmonizing the laws of the country to the new constitution.
The talks among the parties have reportedly been sponsored by Norway and organized by the Zimbabwe Institute. Insiders are warning that a follow-up meeting scheduled for Victoria Falls on Thursday might be in jeopardy owing to the serious factionalism in the ruling ZANU-PF party. Reporting for Studio 7, this is Blessing Zulu.
Thanks, Blessing. Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our hosts will lead discussions about World Peace Day and related issues. Now, a quick recap of today's top stories. A property belonging to the Zimbabwean government is auctioned in South Africa today to pay legal costs incurred by white farmers. The head of the Catholic Church, Pope Francis, begins a three-day visit to the United States tomorrow. That's all we had for you tonight. My name is Chris Gande, handing you over to Standigile Mhlanga for the Ndebele Show.